You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello and welcome to the latest Royal Blue podcast in association with Sport Pacer. I'm Sam Carroll. To my left, we've got Dave Prentice. Our Everton correspondent Adam Jones also joins us. And podcast maestro Paul Wheelock is sitting to my right. We'll get straight into it, Dave. There was a friendly game at Finch Farm yesterday, behind closed door one, and there was a lot of interesting faces turning out for the Blues.
Yeah, I think we were expecting and hoping that Yerry Mina would come through safely, which he did. Only a 60-minute run out, so you know whether he's match fit yet remains to be seen. Seamus Coleman didn't, which was a little bit of an eyebrow raiser. But I think the significant one is that midfielders, you know, sort of came storming back. Gomez, you know, sort of played a game. Benny Beningame played a game. And perhaps a little surprisingly, James McCarthy got through, given the fact that it was 7 months since, you know, he suffered like an absolutely horrific broken leg. And I think if we can say the one area of the Everton team that we probably all agree, you know, hasn't really fired this season has been in midfield, whether it's been Schneiderlin and Gay, you know, we don't think that mix is quite right, whether it's been Davis and Gay, whatever, you know, there's something not quite right in that department. So it's probably quite pleasing to see McCarthy, Gomez, Beningame all coming back and all giving Marco Silva potential options. Don't ask me which one I'd choose to throw in there because I don't know just yet. I mean, none of them appear to like marry with each other particularly well. But I think Gomez is the player that we're all quite, you know, eagerly waiting to see. You know, anybody with, you know, Barcelona education will have some degree of, you know, sort of quality about him. So, yeah, you know, options for Marco Silva, which is what we want.
And Adam, do you think maybe because of his injury problems that he's had now over the last maybe 18 months, even 2 years, do you think James McCarthy is a bit of a forgotten entity?
I was just about to say, he's the archetypal forgotten man a little bit at Goodison Park these days, isn't he? Seem to remember he got injured mid-January, didn't he, against West Brom. Seem to remember he'd hit quite a good run of form.
Probably his best run of form since Martin.
Just before he got injured. Like he was really a really commanding and energetic presence in that midfield. And I think ever since then, whenever Idrissa Gueye's not been there, of course, we've kind of lacked someone with, you know, that little bit of bite in midfield, and I think McCarthy absolutely brings that. And I think he's better at bringing the ball forwards than Gueye, to be honest. No, I'm not saying that he should replace Gueye in any way, shape or form. I think Idrissa Gueye is streets ahead of him at this point, but James McCarthy is going to be a really interesting addition to Marco Silva's squad, I definitely believe.
Yeah, you forget actually how influential he's been in the past, like you say, because it's been so long since we've seen him have a decent run. I mean, that Martinez team, was it 2013-14?
Yeah.
The season that we finished fourth.
It does feel like we finished fourth.
The season we looked like we were going to finish fourth. The turning point undoubtedly was James McCarthy's injury when he was left out against Crystal Palace to, in inverted commas, rest the injury. And, you know, it all went pear-shaped that night. He just brought so much to the team. And likewise, Ronald Koeman discovered that as well. And the derby match, which Sadio Mane won with his 93rd-minute goal at Goodison, again, turning point for that was James McCarthy going off injured because Everton had been well in that game, you know, with him in midfield. So he does bring something, and it's more than just energy. You know, so any player can run around like, you know, a million miles an hour and press and close defenders down. He does it with a sense of purpose, and he uses the ball quite well too when he gets it. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, whether A, he's the kind of player that Marco Silva fancies, and, you know, so B, whether he does get into that team. Long way to go yet. You know, he's only played 60 minutes of a behind closed doors friendly after best part of 7 months on the sidelines. But, you know, he certainly will play a part before Christmas. And so, you know, so let's, you know, see whether Marco Silva fancies him.
Do you think with the price tag and how hard Everton worked to get him, Paul, do you think there's a little bit of pressure on Yerry Mina when he eventually makes that Everton debut?
I suppose there will be, given the price tag and given the club he's come from. But in a strange way, the form of Keane and Zouma is probably going to help him a little bit. You know, probably 2-3 weeks ago, we were saying, well, we need Mina in the team right now. At the moment, it's not such a big rush for him, is there really? Because Keane and Zouma have done very well in recent weeks. And why split up that anyway? Even if Mina is fully fit for Palace a week on Sunday, I'd keep him on the bench because the other two lads have done nothing wrong. So, yeah, of course, there's going to be expectancy surrounding him. But to me, this is probably the best time to, you know, to bed him in easily.
And Adam, the one player kind of out of that group that played yesterday, someone you've seen bits of last season, how good a player do you think Benny Beningame can be for Everton, judging on the small bits we've seen of him last season?
Well, I mean, I remember watching him a few years ago, back when I was watching the under-18s, and he was in that side, and I think he was streets ahead of anybody who was in that side back then. Obviously, he progressed through to the under-23s, and he played so well there. And I think the first chance we got to see him last season was against Chelsea in that League Cup game, wasn't it, when David Unsworth brought him in. And he was absolutely fantastic in that game. I thought Everton were quite unlucky to not come out of that with at least a draw, maybe even having beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge that night. But I think Beningame could be a player with a really good future ahead of him. I think the area that he plays in midfield is going to be difficult for him to get a lot of game time, obviously, because we've got Idrissa Gueye who plays that role very, very well. But you know, now that he's getting his face back involved with the squad, he's obviously a young player, which Marco Silva and Marcel Brands have always said that they want to try and promote at Everton. You know, why can't they try and build on what's already there with Beningame? I think we've seen he's robust in a tackle. He can use the ball well when he's got it. He's got some pace about him, a good strength for his age as well. I think he's got a really good profile set in place there to be a really good Premier League player. So I'm interested to see how well it develops for the rest of this season.
He's got a bit of presence about him, hasn't he? He's one of those players that always seems to want the ball. I mean, there's like a whole clutch of, you know, sort of younger players at Everton that, you know, sort of come in and out of the side. I mean, Tom Davis, I suppose you could say, you know, is in that category at the moment. Kieran Dall, we've seen bits of this season. And Beningame, when we saw him last season, he's a player that you get the impression, you know, he wants to make an impact on every game. He's, you know, he wants the ball. He's quite happy to have that responsibility. And if you're going to succeed in that area of the pitch, you know, that's a quality you need to have. Obviously, you know, the coaches will know, you know, better than us, you know, whether he's ready just yet to be given any first team exposure. But what we saw of him last season was quite impressive.
And then sticking with the young players, anyone who had BT Sport on last night will have seen England under-21s romp to a tight 7-0 victory over Andorra. Adam Luckman opened the score, and after some good work from Tom Davis and John Joe Kenny, put the finishing touches to that. Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored two. Paul, Dave's wrote today that it's a sign from Calvert-Lewin almost to the manager to, you know, Richarlison played up front the other week, but still a very real presence in this Everton team, isn't he?
Yeah,
his Everton squad.
And you'd probably say, more so than Tosin and the Ass this season, that he's probably been outside of Richarlison, obviously, on Saturday at Leicester, Everton's best forward. You know, even though he didn't play well in the game against Fulham, was he? Still won the penalty that Sigurdsson missed. You know, he's got three goals, more than any other natural centre forward we've got at the moment. And I think we were speaking on Monday's Royal Blue, weren't they? I think there's a player there with Calvert-Lewin. I don't know whether he's ready as Everton's first choice centre forward, but he's someone I really like to persist with. I'd have no problem with him being Everton's, say, third choice centre forward. Maybe a loan spell will help him out if he's not getting enough games in the second half of the season. But I think there's something there with him. I think he was thrown into the deep end and he's never let us down, and he seems to be doing well for England as well.
There's definitely something there. I know, was it start of last season, I think, when he made, was it right wing back that Ronald Koeman tossed him in against Stoke?
Oh God.
And then he eventually ended up, you know, putting the cross in for Rooney. And I think I likened him to a young Graham Sharp. Now, don't get this the wrong way, because Sharp, he's an absolute legend, you know, scored second amount of goals in the club's history. But in his early days, Sharp, he was very raw. You know, he needed confidence, he needed a few edges to his game. And you get the impression that Calvert-Lewin, I don't think he'll ever be as good a player as Graham Sharp was, but, you know, he does need a few other things to his game. But he does have something. He has got a bit of pace. He's, you know, a decent finisher. And the point I was making about that piece from last night, food for thought for Marco Silva, did you see his penalty? Yeah. It was like two steps, absolute top corner, Exocet. What's the only game he's not been in the squad all season? Southampton and the Carabao Cup.
I can't think
a penalty shootout.
Yeah.
You know, we needed somebody that could, you know, convert penalties with that degree of ruthlessness. But I just thought that, well, if he is in the squad
specialist,
in the future.
Specialist penalty taker, well, DCL?
Well, Thomas Gravesen actually came off the bench once to take one, yeah, purely in a penalty shootout. So, you know, sometimes, you know, you do need people like that. I mean, obviously Sigurdsson missed his last one. But Tosin and Baines have both scored penalties in the shootout recently. Both very, very good from 12 yards. But they might not be in the first team, you know, sort of throughout the season. We don't know yet if Calvert-Lewin is there or thereabouts. It's another string to his bow. But you're not going to select a player just because he can take penalties. Although I did suggest to Walter Smith a long, long time ago when David Unsworth went down to West Ham and we, I think, did we win 2-1 or drew 2-2? It was a vital game. We were actually struggling down the bottom end of the Premier League and Unzi was getting near the end of his contract. And I remember sending Walter a text after Unzi had scored this incredible, you know, it's a really vital penalty, and saying, come on, Walter, you've got to get close to Unzi, obviously. You've got to give Unzi a new contract after that. And the response, Jesus Christ, Prentice, are we just giving contracts for taking penalties?
I love how that started, Scottish, and then you thought so better
of it. We're off on a bit of a tangent there. But anyway, Calvert-Lewin is not going to get a place in the first team purely because he can take a penalty.
Can we just do a podcast that you do in a Scottish accent?
I do other accents far worse than that. But no, he's clearly, you know, sort of got something, I think, you know, so he deserves to be in the first team squad. And, you know, he will get opportunities this season, and it's up to him whether he takes them.
I think a youth game like that offers a nice little bit of perspective, I think. I think we take for granted how much we actually use these kind of young players. I think, really, because we've been forced to over the last 2 years. Obviously, we know the kind of transfer window struggles that we've had over the last few years, and we've put an undue amount of pressure, I think, on the likes of Jonjo Kenny, Tom Davis, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, especially, you know, these lads. I think Calvert-Lewin's the oldest and he's 21. You know, I think Kenny's actually 21 as well, isn't he? Tom Davis is only 20. You know, these are players that you're still expecting to be in their formative years, you know, still feeling their way into the Premier League, but we've had to rely on them to be first team ready. And I think that's why maybe you're seeing a bit of debate over whether they're good enough for the team. At the minute, they're not meant to be good enough for the team, in my opinion. And you can say all you want, they were only playing Andorra under 21s, whatever. That's their age level. That's their real age level. And look how much they've just destroyed another international team on their age level. Like, they breezed them aside as if it was nothing almost at times last night, especially for the move for that first goal that Adam Ola-Luckman scored. They just made it look so easy. And I think that's the benefit of the Premier League experience that they're getting. And I think we've really saw the detriments over the last few months of just playing them too much, that they are too much in the public eye. I think maybe Jonjo Kenny coming back into the side this season has benefited from Seamus Coleman then regaining his place last season. I think Kenny's looked a lot better when he's come into the side this season. Maybe Davis needs that time to be able to drop out and reassess himself before he comes back in. Calvert-Lewin will have that chance now, so if he gets his chance again, hopefully he'll be able to really kick on again. I think we've just relied on them a little bit too much.
It's a great point, because like just what you were saying there, like, not that England have done Everton too many favours over the years, but there's probably not too many Premier League sides could say that they had four regular first teamers in an under 21 setup, really. And I think you're spot on, Adam, really, because they might not be ready just yet, but what's happened over these last 2 years will be invaluable for them, and hopefully it'll be invaluable for Everton. And if it's not at Everton, I'm pretty sure it'll help them in the careers that they know that they go on to have, even if it's at another club.
Well, actually, they've just got to learn from it the right way, I think. That's the only issue.
Yeah, the one thing that stood out for me last night, as well as, you know, Calvert-Lewin's penalty-taking prowess, was it was Tom Davis's stature in the game. You can tell he's benefited, you know, from playing first-team football, from captaining Everton Football Club. He looked like a midfield general last night. All right, it's Andorra under-21s, but they're still an international team. But he did, you know, he actually did stand out. And a number of the goals he was heavily involved in. He played a lovely little ball through for the one that Nelson, you know, flicked through with his heel. He played the ball across the box for the one that Solanke eventually scored from. You know, he was in and around. And he had a degree of authority about him. And that clearly comes, you know, from the experience he's had this season. And I know, you know, he can divide opinion among some fans, but, you know, he's a young footballer who's going in the right direction. Mm. He's not stalled. You know, he's not going backwards. He is still progressing as a footballer, which is good for Everton.
Yeah, I think if you're going to be 2021, you need to be absolutely exceptional if you're going to be, you know, a regular first team and, you know, you're blowing teams away every week. And I think whilst we've all been excited about Davis and Calvert-Lewin and Kenny, they're probably not that exceptional world-class level. But that's not to say that they can't be amazingly good players for Everton in the future. We've just got to let them develop in the right way. And yeah. I think hopefully games like this is just going to be a massive confidence booster to them.
And it's amazing sometimes, you know, how things can change so quickly. I'm thinking back of, you know, when Jack Rodwell and Dan Gosling both came through at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rodwell looked like an absolute star in the making for a long time.
So much so
that Man City spent, you know, an awful lot of money on him. And then his career just disintegrated. So, you know, things can change very, very quickly. So, you know, Davis is certainly moving in the right direction at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And just to quickly draw a line on the under-23s or under-21s, three players we spoke a lot about there, Kenny, Davis and Calvert-Lewin. Paul, do you think Luckman's been a little bit unlucky this season in terms of Walcott, Richarlison and Bernard all playing really well? Do you think he would have got in other Everton sides down the years, he probably would have been getting a chance, or do you think he's still got, in what he's shown in Royal Blue, do you think he's still got a little bit more work to go?
No, I know he had a really good spell on loan in Germany with Leipzig, but what he'd done previously for Everton, and probably his few performances in pre-season didn't do enough to me to suggest that he should have started the season. And given the impact that Richarlison's made, and I know Walcott's been a bit flaky in the last couple of games, but I still think he's had a decent start to the season. I think he's got work to do, and I think, you know what, if there wasn't all that speculation about him in the summer, he'd be in a pretty good position right now, wouldn't he? Coming off the bench in the Premier League, he's only been came 18 months ago from Charlton. He's in a good position. It's just that he's had his head turned by Leipzig, and maybe he thinks he should be playing, but from my view, he shouldn't. Not at this moment in time, anyway.
Still a little bit more work for Luckman, Adam?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe we're looking at his low move in Leipzig with a bit of rose-tinted glasses, I think, especially February, March time. I seem to remember him struggling to get into the side. I think an injury to Emil Forsberg eventually let him get back into their side. Obviously, he couldn't play Europa League games for them, so it was only Bundesliga games that he could play.
Still incredible to think Everton were in the Europa League last season. That seems like a terrible nightmare, doesn't it?
It's a long time ago, wasn't it? Yeah, I think, you know, he bagged a couple of goals for them, obviously bagged couple last game of the season as well, and you know he's probably looking at the likes of Jadon Sancho, who's absolutely ripping it up in the Bundesliga at the minute, despite only coming off the bench for most games for Dortmund this season. I think he's the best assist maker so far in all of Europe's top five leagues. That's absolutely incredible. And to be honest, if I'm looking at it in Adam Ola Luchman's shoes, I'm probably looking at Sancho and going, God, I wish I could be going out there and doing that. But problem is, obviously there was that speculation, and we don't know what's gone on behind the scenes, but he's just not got his chance in the squad this season. I personally think he played quite well against Southampton, and I think that he should try and use that as some sort of energy for him for the next few weeks. You know, just get yourself onto that bench. If Everton need you, get on that pitch and put your heart and soul in, and who knows, he could easily still fight his way into the team. From the little flashes that we've seen of him, there's a really quality player in there. Like, I'm thinking especially of the Derby game at Anfield in the FA Cup. Yeah. Like, he came on and changed that game for Everton, essentially. Like, that kind of Adam Ola Luchman's what we all want to see, but we've seen it not regularly enough for me so far.
Agree entirely. I mean, he's done it a few times. The Watford game, the 3-2, when again was a turning point, was him coming on and, you know, running at players. But you've got to do that on a consistent basis to hold down a first team place, and he hasn't done it, you know, often enough. I mean, the Southampton performance was quite bright, but you know, Bernard also showed a lot that game and kept it going. You know, I know he was given the opportunity to do so, which obviously Luckman wasn't, but that'll be because of what he's showing on the training pitch. And you keep hearing little sniffs and little rumours that the attitude isn't quite right, and we don't know quite what that means. But you know, clearly there's something, you know, jarring a little bit with the manager, which is why he's not getting his opportunities, you know, as often as, you know, other players are. But it's entirely down to him. You know, he has got ability, he has got talent, he's got to apply himself in the correct way, you know, to be able to show it.
And obviously there was some full internationals on last night. Lucas Digne and Kurt Zouma made their return to the France fold, and they played out a 2-2 draw against Iceland, with Gylfi Sigurdsson creating one of the goals for Iceland, and Kylian Mbappe doing what all brilliant teenagers do and scoring two late international goals. What kind of impact do you think the two Frenchmen have had at Goodison since arriving?
Interesting on this, because Zouma's been great. You know, he's settled in very, very securely and solidly, you know, not being spectacular, but you don't want your centre-backs to be spectacular, you just want them to be safe. And he has done that. He's been unfortunate not to score a couple of times as well. You know, he's a threat in the opposition penalty area. Lucas Digne is a strange one. All right, hands up, I'm a massive Leighton Baines fan here. And I thought...
Oh, I'm going to disagree with you.
I don't know what's coming here.
I just thought, you know, he was bombed after one sloppy performance at Bournemouth, and we haven't seen him since.
Yeah.
You know, one Carabao Cup tie apart. Now, Dean's been great going forward, absolutely. You know, so he's provided the energy and he's provided the quality into the box, which is clearly what Marco Silva wanted. The Baines, you know, arguably used to supply, you know, in the Pienaar days, maybe not so much in recent years, but he's been a little bit sloppy on occasions defensively. I can think of two or three occasions when Everton have been caught out. You know, one certainly which, you know, cost Everton a goal. So, you know, he's still finding his way into a new league, into a new team. And he's been promising, but I don't quite buy into, you know, the big love in that, you know, yeah, great, he's superstar in the making. He's decent, but don't write out Leighton Baines just yet. I think that if he does have a little dip, you know, we might see a bit more of Bainesy before the season's out. But yeah, both good additions to the squad, and, you know, so I'm quite happy with both of them. And I'll bring in the prime member of the Lucas Digne fan club.
Oh yeah, I think Lucas Digne's great, and I think he's a superstar in the making. No, like, I agree with the large majority of what you've said, but I would caveat his defensive form with not being part of a set-up back four. I think he's looked much better defensively having Kurt Zouma next to him, like knowing that you're going to have a certain centre-back next to him, even having Idrissa Gueye in front of him. I think that's been the problem for like for the majority of our defenders this season. I'd say that's been the issue, just not having that settled line. So that's why I'm a bit wary of shaking that up in any way, especially that's like when you're trying to bring Yeni Mina back into it. I'm not saying that Yeni Mina shouldn't come back in. I think he eventually will be our starting centre back. And then I think Kurt Zouma is going to be the key centre back, I believe. I think he possesses qualities for me that no other centre back at the club has. And I'm thinking necessarily about his ability to bring the ball out from the back. I think he's quite clearly learned a lot at Chelsea from that under numerous different managers. He had the spell playing in defensive mid at one point. I think that might have been under Mourinho. I'm not sure. But yeah, he had the spell of defensive mid for them. And he's obviously learned so much about bringing the ball out, when to bring the ball out, how to make those kind of passes. He's still got a lot to learn about positional play, but his recovery pace as well is absolutely phenomenal. I think that has complemented Michael Keane so well. And I think it'll complement Yeni Mina so well, who's not exactly the quickest from what I've seen of his time at Barcelona, at least. So I think Zouma's going to be the key player, but I think going back to Dean, I think he's absolutely taken advantage of what's been the cutthroat nature of the Premier League. Really, I think finally it's come round for Leighton Baines to feel that. Like for the last few years, Leighton Baines just hasn't had that competition. I think he's probably declined a little bit from his extremely lofty perch, don't get me wrong. He's declined a little bit over the last couple of seasons, I'd say, to where he is now. We've needed cover in that position for a while. Now that it's finally here, he was finally punished for one of those mistakes, like that one against Bournemouth. I think he deserved to be punished for that mistake. Yeah. And I think I don't think Dean's done anything massively wrong that I would say he needs to be dropped for. There are improvements that can be made defensively, but when he came to the club, he said, well, first and foremost, I'm a good defender. Like he tried to play down his attack and play rather than like play down his defensive play. So I think maybe once we've seen Dean, you know, string a run of 5-10 games together, then maybe we'll see the real player.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I love Baines-y. Absolutely love him. Brilliant. One of my favourite Everton players, probably. I know that some people might say, well, I was too young in the 80s, but that's been the time I first went to the game. But he has been one of the most consistent Everton players I've seen over the years. I just think Dean suits this system better. Mm-hmm. It's a system that still concerns me. I still think, even at Leicester, as well as we played, we get caught up in the pitch so wide open. And my fear is when we play, I don't know, a City or Liverpool, yeah, you know, who do like equally like to counter-attack, I still have real fears about the system. But you can't moan too much given what we had to put up with last season, you know. We can't have it both ways.
Paul Wheelock, bring Allardyce back.
Definitely did not say that. But no, what I do like about Dean is his attacking ability, because I think Baines has had to be more economical over the years, given the fact he isn't as, not as fit, because he's unbelievably fit, but he isn't up and down as much as he was once, and Dean is that now. And what's really impressed me is his crossing ability. And he must have had, is it two or three assists so far, or at least been involved in two or three goals. But it's still strange not to see Baines down the left anymore. It, as you said, it's really harsh, cutthroat, but I suppose that's what the manager's here to do.
Well, there's such a chance as well to have Dean strike up some sort of partnership with, I think we need to decide whoever's going to play on the left first, whether it's going to be Bernard or Richarlison, but I think he's had some fantastic link-up play with the pair of them. I think especially with Bernard in that Leicester game. You know, there was so often when Bernard would just hold the ball up and wait for him, and there'd be such a nice interplay between the two. I'm looking forward to seeing how that kind of develops over the next few weeks.
There was a nice degree of interchangeability as well, you know, which is, we don't really want to compare them to, you know, the side across the park, but, you know, that's what their much, you know, fabled front three do so well. You know, they dovetail and drop in and out of positions and make themselves very, very difficult to pick up and mark. And Richarlison and Bernard were doing that to a great degree. I mean, a number of times Richarlison appeared up on the left again, you know, rather than down the middle. You know, Bernard went inside, and it was good to watch, and it made themselves, you know, a very, very difficult team to defend against. And it was refreshing. You know, I know we've already covered the other Leicester game in an earlier podcast this week, but, you know, some of the quality of the football was great and very, very heartening.
Paul, just to throw your school teacher hat on a moment, Adam Jones sitting across the table from you, so don't be too harsh. Rated Everton summer signings this week. He gave Keir Toomer.
Right, he's not rating me.
Sorry. Well, we can do.
Go on. Give me all the rating. Go on. This can be the appraisal.
Adam gave Keir Toomer a B. Is that something you'd agree with?
Yeah.
Solid.
Definitely.
Solid rating.
Yeah. No argument.
Richarlison A+. Happy with that.
Yeah, I think you would give him an A. I think this is going to be quite easy.
The only thing that I caveated the Richarlison thing was he did get sent off against Bournemouth for that
and the penalty, the little bit
of ill discipline
and the penalty.
A penalty is a penalty. Like,
if you're gonna do that run up, you got to score.
The run up made me laugh. If I'm honest, I've now got up to the point where the run up is making me laugh.
No, but he has, all joking aside, he's become our key man, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he's essentially been our best player this season. So,
Prenno, something me and Adam were talking about earlier is that two Premier League runs on the spin now, the international break, maybe came at quite an annoying time. But how important do you think that momentum will be when we do eventually get back into the thick of things against Crystal Palace?
Momentum counts for everything. Yeah, it does. You know, it generates confidence, you know, so teams can't wait to play the next game when you get a little run of, you know, victories going. It was very, very important to get a result at Leicester because, you know, after the disappointments of the Carabao Cup game, after the, you know, the grim Huddersfield draw, and even Fulham was, okay, 3-0 looks like a great win. But first half, you know, Everton weren't really at it, and Fulham were unfortunate not to be a couple of goals, you know, to the good at half time. So the Leicester game was very, very important to get a result from, to go into a fortnight's break and not think, here we go again, roller coaster, one good result, one bad result. It was two very good results back to back. And the fact that there was a new system, you know, employed, which worked very well, the fact that Bernard was given his first, you know, extended outing in a Premier League game and looked absolutely brilliant, it just all whetted the appetite, you know, for what we're going to see. Now, Palace are a weird team. You know, they can be really, really awkward to play against. They've got some very, very good players. Obviously, if Zaha performs, you know, they can be, you know, very, very dangerous. If he doesn't, you know, equally, they can be quite easy to turn over. So it's a game that Everton would expect to continue that run against, but equally, you know, one you can't take for granted. But, you know, beat Crystal Palace and suddenly had three wins on the spin and suddenly everyone's absolutely bouncing and can't wait for the next game. So, yeah, momentum generates, you know, confidence generates wins, and it's very, very important.
After the Leicester win, Adam, Phil Kirkbride wrote that, you know, we've seen a little bit of a different Everton away from home, you know, confident Everton away from home, something that we haven't seen for quite a few years. But now it's time to bring Fortress Goodison back, and it's actually quite funny. You look at maybe the next 2 months, we play the likes of Crystal Palace, Brighton, Cardiff and Newcastle at home. but each game follows Manchester United away, Chelsea away, Liverpool away, Manchester City away. How important is momentum going to be to getting wins at home and then going into these fixtures and saying, right, let's have a go?
Yeah, I think I completely agree with what Phil said in that piece. I think in general, I think we've looked better away from home than we have at home. I think, honestly, in another reality, we could be sitting here with 12 points from our four away games. Like, we really should have beaten Wolves, definitely should have beaten Bournemouth, you know, put those chances away against Arsenal, and that's a completely different game. And obviously we did get the win against Leicester. I just think the system that Marco Silva's employed so far is one that works so much better away from home, because naturally you've got a bit less possession. So obviously we're pressing high from the front as much as we can, you know, blocking the spaces for the defenders to try and pass into so that they can't build from the back and into the midfield. It worked especially well against Leicester, and I think that's why we eventually saw us creating a lot of chances. But I think what gave me so much heart in that Leicester game is that once they had a man sent off, we had to change our system a little bit, and we had to change more to what we would be looking like at home, because obviously with them having 10 men, we've got to start trying to dominate possession ourselves. And we moved Sigurdsson back into that deeper lying role, gave him as much space as we could, and obviously that paid off. So I'd like to see us maybe explore that a bit more in the home games, you know, because we need to try and use possession a bit better at home. I think the first half against Fulham really proved that. The whole match against West Ham proved that, you know, like, if we haven't got that kind of influence in midfield, who's going to be able to collect the ball from the defenders and put us straight onto the attack, if we haven't got that like we had against West Ham, then we're just going to get exploited. And I think, as Preno said there, Palace are one of those teams that if you do give them sort of opportunities, they've got the kind of players who can hurt you. Like, thinking especially like Wilfred Zaha, give him too much space and he's going to absolutely punish you. So yeah, I'd like to see us build up that kind of momentum. Like, you've got to target those home games as all as wins. Like, no disrespect to any of those teams, but you've got to be trying to win all those games to, if you're wanting Everton to be where we need to be. And then with the away games, I think the most promising thing that I've seen so far is how we attacked Arsenal in that game. I've never seen us, well, for the last few years, I haven't seen us really go at one of those like top six sides, shall we say. Never seen us go at them like that and take it to them at their place. So, especially with Man United at home, who's to say we just can't take the game to them and really go at them, especially with the form that they're in.
Oh, and Newcastle did, and nearly
exactly. Did. You know, imagine the confidence boost that that'll give you, like going into the next home game, steamroller whoever we've got at home then, and then you're looking into the Chelsea game then, you know, getting a good result at Stamford Bridge, maybe our first win in how many years?
1995, poor Ryder. I was there, yeah.
So what month of 95 was it?
It was dark, it was November. Oh. Barry Horn missed an absolute sitter in the last minute, about 4 yards out. And I remember saying to him afterwards, what were you thinking? He goes, I wanted to keep it interesting.
We were in that yellow and black kit that day. Was it yellow and black, the kit? Or was the white one? Yeah. Danke. Yeah. It's just interesting what you were saying about the home games here. And I speak here as a fan and a season ticket holder rather than a journalist. I actually think the supporters, and I count myself as one of those, has to play the part as well. Like,
yeah.
I was a season ticket holder up until about 2004, and then I got one before the start of last season because work meant that, you know, I was covering football myself, so I couldn't get to games on a regular basis, and the atmosphere is not as good as what it was once, and I'm not blaming supporters myself or anyone like that at the moment, and I think...
I blame you, Paul.
Yeah, blame me. It's me. You told me it was great before they came back. But in terms of, like, we'll all expect to roll over Palace a week on Sunday, and it won't be like that because they are a good side, and they've caused problems at Goodison in the past, haven't they? And I think, quite rightly, last season, the atmosphere was bad because of what happened. Like, there's a disintegration under Koeman, and then the football under Allardyce would never get you going, would it, at all? But under Silva, the football is better. And I think it probably just needs to become a bit more intimidating, Goodison, again. And again, I'm not saying this as a journalist. I'm saying this because I could do it in the ground. I don't sing in the ground anymore. I've got a young lad, and he doesn't really sing, and he should be, because that's what I did when I was growing up on the Gladys Street. And I just think maybe, if we're going to make the most of these home games, yeah, it's up to the team, but I just wonder if the atmosphere could improve a little bit.
I would
well.
Have to say the away support this season, like, I haven't been to every away game this season. They've been absolutely phenomenal in every match. Like, absolutely drowned out the Emirates
I don't think it's just Everton, by the way. It's like a cultural change. I think, you know, Liverpool friends of mine, I know they've got the European nights and things like that, but supposedly against City, the atmosphere wasn't that great. I think it's just something's changed. I don't know. Maybe home games, maybe where the atmosphere is, the away games now.
Yeah, it's hard to put your finger on. Like, obviously, you've mentioned their performances were really didn't help last season, so maybe it's just some sort of hangover off the back of that. Like, that's what I'm hoping anyway. And hopefully, if we can bring, you know, that kind of energetic style of football back to Goodison, like, I don't think we've really seen it that much. I don't know whether there's a bit of added pressure maybe playing at home, like, under these fans who deserve better, like, not just expect it, deserve better. Like, there is going to be some sort of added pressure for both the manager and the team. So maybe once they've got over that stumbling block, we'll be able to see us, you know, getting back to beating teams 3-4-0 every week.
It's a good talking point, the atmosphere, because it's always been said in the past, you know, is it the fans' responsibility to get the team going, or is it the team's responsibility to get the fans
going? It's a two-way street, really, isn't it?
And normally, when you've got an attainable target within sight, you know, either you're fighting against relegation or you're going for a European place, you know, that gives everybody something to cling on to and something to get excited about. And at the moment, we're in a position where we're absolutely slap bang in the middle of the table. There isn't any definable target to cheer about. So it is basically what you're witnessing on the pitch, and you need a good start. You need someone to go close early doors. You need someone to throw in a real meaty challenge early on just to get that crowd whipped up.
Phil Neville on Ronaldo style.
Well, exactly, yeah, and it does. It makes a difference. That, wasn't it? Neville Southall always used to say that. He used to, you know, if things were struggling, you know, he would tell somebody, you know, so come on, throw a real, you know, meaty tackle and just get the crowd on our side again. And so it is, I mean, you know, it will need someone to do something early on against Crystal Palace to try and get that, you know, from and go and get the crowd going. But it's interesting, you know, because, you know, you don't know who has the responsibility. Is it the players? Is it the team? Or are we all in it together? It's weird.
And just while we're on the point, Dave, what is the best atmosphere you've ever experienced yourself at Goodison?
Oh, 100%. I mean, everyone always says Bayern Munich, and it was absolutely incredible. I remember when Dieter Hoeneß, you know, went down the far end, and Neville Southall coming out, and I had absolute confidence he was going to save it because he was so good, and he did save it. Ludwig Kogel, he'd gone through, and he saved it, but the ball spanned loose, and it spanned to Hoeneß, who rolled it in, and there was utter silence in the ground. And then suddenly, like, this roar of defiance straight afterwards. And it was an amazing atmosphere, but I don't think it was, you know, the best. The best for me was Wimbledon. It was just absolute, it was primeval.
Bedlam, wasn't it?
I mean, and there was only 32,000 in there because the parking was empty. And you could see people hanging from the trees in the parking trying to watch him. All week we'd been acting like councillors. People have been ringing the office basically saying, you know, we're not going down, are we? And it was, you know, people were so terrified that Everton were going to get relegated. And then, you know, to be two down and then to suddenly turn it round, I just can't actually describe the atmosphere. It was absolutely primeval that day. And the final whistle, when the whistle went, and even then I still wasn't sure Everton was safe. I was doing a Footy Echo runner that day, and the crowd were on the pitch, like, celebrating, doing cartwheels. And I'm thinking, well, hang on, no one knew what the results still needed to go in our favour. And we'd lost sight of the fact that Sheffield United at Chelsea, because they were winning a couple of goals up, and everyone thought, oh, well, you know, they're safe. You know, Chelsea came back to win 3-2. I remember Phil McNulty was sat to me right. I said, what's going on? Why is everyone celebrating? And he just started screaming, Chelsea have won, you know, so we're safe. So, you know, that was all going on. I was able to start screaming down the phone to the copy taker. You can see John Fashanu on the pitch trying to get the Wimbledon players off the pitch and down the tunnel to safety, because they genuinely thought they were going to get, you know, badly hurt that day. I mean, the team must have been torched the night before. Because, you know, the fans were so up for him. That was just amazing. I mean, I'd never like to go through it again because it was just so fraught and so horrible. But as atmospheres go, that'll never be beaten. That would buy a Munich.
She was down my spine thinking about that. I was up at Gladys Street that day, and there was a fellow who must have been pushing 90, and I just thought it was an achievement to us staying up, and an achievement to him coming through that game, to be honest. Because we went through the ring of emotions, and it's just like, that could be a pod on its own, couldn't it?
Oh, definitely.
You know, Goodison. That day was crazy.
And Adam, for people more of our generation?
If people of our generation don't say that Fiorentina game, then I'm not sure.
Chelsea in the FA Cup as well, the Lukaku one. or the Duncan Ferguson diving header against Manchester
all,
United.
All three of them were very similar atmospheres and all would definitely be in a top 10.
That Fiorentina game, yeah. Like, I don't think I've ever celebrated a goal as much as that Arteta goal. And I remember, like, as a wee lad in the Upper Bullens, I saw him lining up the shot and I was thinking to myself, don't shoot. And then he buried it in the bottom corner and I was there with my cousin and both of us, I think we ended up about five rows in front of where we were actually sat. We just absolutely legged it down the aisle, just going absolutely mental.
The atmosphere around those days, that's why Moyes does. I know it's not like a done thing to say, and I was talking to someone about this the other day. I've got a lot of time for David Moyes personally, as an Everton fan. And you know, I know when you say in the Echo quite a bit, Greg says it, Greg O'Keefe, formerly obviously the Echo, it's a bear pit. And around that time of Moyes, it was, wasn't it? Yeah. I remember when I used to go back and it'd be in the Gladys Street and it was so intimidating. Yeah. Like that Fiorentina match was just unbelievable. And it's like you were talking about Munich before and it's just like all memories flooding back because my dad was obviously there that night. And you know, remember that BBC video growing up, like the Everton history, and like it was always on in our house, obviously video showing my age here now as well. And it was like you sucked the ball into the back of the net. Ratcliffe said it, and I think around that time as well, Everton was like that again under Moyes. Yeah. Like, and that's what I'm comparing it to, because that's when I went sporadically, and I just think it's just not had that again since.
There's one mad one as well that are very, very old fans, you know, so even of my vintage talk about. The official attendance on the night was 49,000, and there were considerably more in the game in the ground, because they played Southampton in an FA Cup fifth round replay, and it had gone to extra time. And you know what they do? They open the gates 10 minutes in the end, days of terraces rather than seats, to let the early departures, you know, so exit the ground. All the urchins outside came flooding in, you know, so opportunities to see extra time. It's going to be extra half an hour of football. So Eamon O'Keefe scored the winner, like first half of extra time, and the place just was absolutely, you know, bedlam. That was mayhem. And that's on YouTube somewhere, and everyone talks about, you know, so how mad that night was. But, you know, that was a different era entirely, days of terracing and stuff, you know, when you see, you know, fans swaying up and down, people getting carried out. That was just accepted. In the days of seats, it was very, very different. But yeah, you know, there have been a number of, you know, sort of really significant ones. Not so much in recent years. Need to have a few more of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'd be hoping for a good atmosphere when Premier League football returns to Goodison Park as the Blues take on Crystal Palace next week. We'll be back with another podcast early on next week to preview that game. But for today, thank you very much for joining Dave, Adam, Paul and myself. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.